Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the Murder Tape Chronicles. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present Rat City, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, The Fall. Seattle is a city of ghosts. Not the kind that rattle chains in old mansions, but the kind that haunt the streets, their faces hidden under layers of dirt, their stories swallowed by the noise of a world that doesn't give a damn. I should know, I'm one of them. My name is Jack Calloway. I used to be someone. A Marine, a soldier, a man with a future. Now, I'm just another shadow slouching through alleyways, sleeping under overpasses, and keeping my head down in a city that's long since decided I don't matter. On the night my world went to hell, I was exactly where the city expected me to be, drunk, half-conscious, and curled up in the filth behind a gas station in Belltown. I don't remember much about that night before the sirens came. Just the cold biting through my jacket, the stink of old piss and gasoline, and the dull ache in my ribs from where some punk tried to roll me for the $5 I didn't have. Then the lights hit me, red and blue flashing across wet pavement. Jack Calloway, get on the ground now. I was still trying to figure out if they were talking to me when the first cop slammed a knee into my back. My face hit the concrete hard enough to rattle my teeth. What the hell? I tried to say, but my voice was swallowed by the rain and the weight of the officer pressing down on me. Cold steel snapped around my wrists. You're under arrest for the murder of Senator Paul Whitaker. Murder? The words barely registered before they were dragging me off the ground and stuffing me into the back of a squad car. The stench of sweat and old leather filled my nose. My hands were numb. My brain was trying to catch up, but it was moving through sludge. Whitaker. I knew the name. Everyone in Seattle did. A big-shot senator, all smiles on TV, shaking hands, making speeches. The kind of guy who looked like he belonged in a magazine cover, not on a slab in the morgue. I tried to tell them they had the wrong guy. That I didn't even know Whitaker, let alone have a reason to kill him. But no one was listening. They took me to the precinct, shoved me into a chair in a windowless room with a flickering light bulb overhead, and left me there to stew. The walls smelled like sweat, coffee, and old cigarettes. A one-way mirror stared back at me, empty and judging. I wasn't alone for long. A man in a cheap suit strolled in, carrying a folder thick enough to break a nose. He had the kind of face that had seen too much and cared too little, lined, tired, with eyes that had long since stopped believing in innocence. "Detective Harris," he said, dropping into the chair across from me. "You know why you're here?" I swallowed, my mouth dry as dust. "No." He flipped open the folder. "We have security footage of a man matching your description stabbing Senator Whitaker outside the Orion Club last night. You want to explain that?" I blinked. "What?" He turned the folder around. A grainy, black-and-white photo stared back at me. A man in a hooded jacket, half obscured by shadows, a knife in his hand, caught mid-motion as he drove the blade into a suited man's stomach. And goddamn if the bastard didn't look like me. My breath caught. "That's not me." Harris didn't even flinch. "Really? You sure about that? Because it looks a hell of a lot like you." I shook my head, panic creeping in like ice water through my veins. "I was passed out behind a gas station last night. Ask anyone." Harris sighed. "We did. Nobody saw you. And guess what else? Your fingerprints were found on the dumpster a few blocks from the crime scene. You want to tell me how that happened?" I opened my mouth, then closed it. Shit. I had no idea how my prints got there. But it didn't matter. They already had their story. The trial wasn't a trial. It was a goddamn execution. A public defender who didn't give a damn. A jury that made up their minds before I even walked into the courtroom. Evidence stacked against me like a mountain. Motive? They pulled one out of thin air. Some bullshit about me being desperate, needing money, maybe trying to rob Whitaker, and it went wrong. The media ran with it. Homeless veteran kills senator in cold blood. I was the villain they needed. A cautionary tale. A problem swept under the rug. It didn't matter that I screamed my innocence. It didn't matter that I had no reason to kill Whitaker. They wanted a body in a cell. And they chose mine. They threw me in a holding cell, waiting for sentencing. The walls smelled like sweat and hopelessness. The bars cast long shadows on the floor, stretching like the fingers of a dead man. I sat on the cot, staring at the cracks in the ceiling, my hands clenched into fists. I wasn't going down for this. I wasn't going to rot in a cell for a crime I didn't commit. Someone set me up, and I was going to find out who, even if I had to burn this whole city to the ground. Chapter 2. Into the Tunnels. Freedom came in the dead of night. I don't know if it was luck, divine intervention, or just the universe giving me one last shot, but when the riot kicked off in the holding block, I knew I had maybe 10 seconds to make a choice. 10 seconds between dying in this hellhole or vanishing into the streets where I belonged. The guards were too busy breaking up the brawl between two lifers to notice me slipping through the chaos, squeezing past the open gate before it slammed shut. My heart pounded as I kept my head down, walking like I belonged, like I wasn't just another ghost trying to slip through the cracks. The front doors were a pipe dream. Too many eyes, too many guns. So I went the only way someone like me could. Down. Sewers are disgusting. They smell like death and piss, and things worse than either of those. But they also don't ask questions. I dropped through a maintenance shaft, landed in a pool of something I'd rather not identify, and ran like hell. By the time I came up for air, I was miles from the jail, my breath ragged, my hands shaking. The city stretched around me, endless and uncaring. I was free. But freedom wasn't enough. I needed the truth. I needed to find the bastard who framed me. And the only place to get answers? Rat City. Most people don't know about the tunnels beneath Seattle. The city was built on top of itself, burying its past like a body in a shallow grave. There's a whole world down there, collapsed buildings, forgotten passageways, a labyrinth of darkness where the desperate and the dangerous make their home. I'd heard whispers about it before. A place where the city's filth collected, where rules didn't exist, where the only thing that mattered was survival. If you were running from something, or someone, it was the place to go. And if you needed information about the things the world wasn't supposed to know, it was the only place to go. I found my way in through an old storm drain, crouching low as I moved through the dark. The air was thick, damp, carrying the stench of mold and rusted metal. Rats scurried past my boots, their tiny claws scratching against the concrete. I wasn't alone down here. I could feel eyes on me. Watching. Judging. Then I heard the voices. Low murmurs, a whisper of movement. I tightened my grip on the rusted pipe I'd picked up along the way, and kept moving. The first man stepped out of the darkness, so fast I barely saw him. 1 second, I was alone. The next, I had a blade pressed to my throat. "Well, well," a voice rasped. "Looks like we got a fresh one." I didn't flinch. The man in front of me was skeletal, his skin stretched tight over sharp cheekbones. He wore layers of tattered clothing, his eyes hollow and black in the dim light. Behind him, two more figures emerged from the shadows. I kept my voice steady. "I'm looking for someone." Laughter. One of the others, a stocky man with a twisted grin, stepped closer. "You hear that, boys? He's looking for someone." I tightened my grip on the pipe. "I don't have time for games." The skeletal man's grin widened. "Down here, all we got is time." He pressed the blade in just enough to nick my skin. A warning. A test. I failed the test. I moved fast, grabbing his wrist and twisting hard. He let out a sharp yelp as the knife clattered to the ground. Before the others could react, I drove my elbow into his throat and sent him sprawling. The stocky one lunged at me, but I was faster. I swung the pipe, catching him across the jaw. Teeth flew. Blood spattered against the damp wall. He crumpled. The last man hesitated, eyes flicking to his fallen friends. I took a step toward him, voice cold. "Still wanna play?" He vanished into the shadows without another word. I exhaled, my pulse still hammering. A slow clap echoed through the tunnel. I turned, my body tense, my hands ready. A woman stood at the end of the corridor, arms crossed, watching me with something between amusement and curiosity. She had long black hair, streaked with dirt and grime, and a scar running down her left cheek. She wasn't big, but there was something in her stance, something sharp, something dangerous. "You got a name?" she asked. "Jack," I said. She smirked. "Lucky for you, Jack, I don't like those guys." I eyed her warily. "And you are?" "Nina." She stepped closer, the firelight from a nearby barrel casting flickering shadows across her face. "You're looking for someone," she said. tell me why I should care. I met her gaze. Because someone framed me for a murder I didn't commit. And the only man who might have the answers is Rourke. The name changed her expression instantly. She studied me for a long moment, then nodded. Come with me. I hesitated. Just like that. She shrugged. You want to find Rourke? You'll need me to get to him. I weighed my options. I didn't trust her. But I needed answers. And if Rourke was the king of this underground kingdom, then Nina was my only ticket to an audience. All right, I said. Lead the way. She smirked, turning on her heel. Try to keep up. I followed her deeper into the darkness, my gut telling me I was stepping into something bigger than I could imagine. Something deadly. Something I might not walk away from. But I didn't care. Because I wasn't just looking for answers anymore. I was looking for revenge. Chapter 3, The Devil's Bargain. The deeper we went, the further we slipped from reality. Seattle's underground stretched like a decayed, forgotten skeleton beneath the city, a maze of abandoned passages, collapsed tunnels, and crumbling ruins from the old world. It was a place swallowed by time, where the lost and damned had built their kingdom of shadows. And I was walking straight into it. Nina led the way, moving like she had memorized every inch of these tunnels. I followed close, feeling the weight of the darkness pressing in on me. The flickering lights of trash can fires cast long, jagged shadows along the walls. The smell of mildew, urine, and unwashed bodies clung to the air like a ghost that wouldn't let go. I had been in war zones that felt more welcoming than this place. We passed groups of people huddled together under ragged blankets, their faces hollowed by hunger and desperation. Some watched us pass with vacant stares. Others tracked our movements like wolves waiting for weakness. You sure this Rourke guy is going to help me? I muttered. Nina didn't stop walking. Help. She chuckled, low and dry. Rourke doesn't help anyone. He makes deals. I sighed. What kind of deals? She glanced at me over her shoulder. The kind you don't walk away from. I should have turned back right then. But I didn't. Because I wasn't here for help. I was here for blood. After what felt like an eternity, we reached a set of rusted iron doors. Two men stood outside, gripping sawed-off shotguns like they were an extension of their arms. One of them, a thick-necked bastard with a tattoo running down his face, eyed me like I was something he scraped off his boot. Who's the new meat? Jack Calloway, Nina said. He's got business with Rourke. Tattoo face snorted. Everyone's got business with Rourke. I took a step forward. Mine's important. He grinned, showing yellowed teeth. That what they all say. The other guard, a wiry guy with sharp eyes, sighed. Let him in before you start measuring dicks, Derek. If he's wasting Rourke's time, we'll kill him after. Derek grunted, then banged twice on the iron door. A heavy bolt slid open from the other side, and the door groaned inward. Try not to piss him off, Derek muttered as we stepped through. Inside, the space opened into a massive underground chamber, half-natural cave, half-man-made fortress. The walls were lined with stolen goods, crates of liquor, boxes of stolen electronics, stacks of weapons. The place buzzed with activity. Men and women moved like clockwork, running an operation that felt more like a military base than a hideout. And at the center of it all, sitting on an old leather armchair, like a king on his throne, was Rourke. He was older than I expected, maybe in his 50s, with a bald head and sharp blue eyes that cut through the dim light like a razor. He wore a simple black suit, no tie, his sleeves rolled up to reveal forearms laced with faded tattoos. A cigarette burned between his fingers, the smoke curling lazily toward the ceiling. He looked at me like he had already decided whether I was worth his time. Nina gave him a nod. He's looking for answers. Rourke exhaled a long stream of smoke. That's so. I stepped forward. Someone framed me for Whitaker's murder. I need to know who. Silence. Then, Rourke let out a low chuckle. And why the hell would I care? I clenched my jaw. Because the bastard who set me up is part of the system. Someone high up. And that means they're a problem for you, too. That got his attention. Rourke leaned forward, resting his elbows on his knees. His eyes studied me like a chess piece he wasn't sure where to place. You think I don't already know who killed Whitaker? He asked. My heart skipped. You know. He nodded, flicking ash onto the floor. Course I do. I swallowed hard. Then tell me. Rourke smiled. You think information like that comes for free? My hands curled into fists. What do you want? He took a slow drag of his cigarette, then blew the smoke toward the ceiling. There's a man. A problem. Name's Victor Langley. The name hit me like a punch to the gut. Victor Langley was a fixer. one of the most dangerous men in Seattle. He handled the dirty work for politicians, businessmen, cops, anyone who could afford his services. If Rourke wanted him gone, it meant Langley had become a threat. "You take care of Langley," Rourke said, his voice smooth as silk, "and I'll give you what you want." I stared at him. "You want me to kill him?" Rourke's smile didn't falter. "You got a problem with that?" "I should have. I should have walked away. But I didn't. Because if Langley was involved, then this wasn't just about clearing my name. This was bigger. This was the kind of shit that didn't just end in a prison sentence. It ended in a body bag." I met Rourke's eyes and nodded. "I'll do it." His smile widened. "Attaboy." He reached into his jacket, pulled out a folded slip of paper, and handed it to me. I opened it. "An address. He'll be there tomorrow night," Rourke said. "Make it clean." I nodded, slipping the paper into my pocket. I had my target. I had my mission. And one way or another, tomorrow night, someone was going to die. Nina walked me back through the tunnels, her footsteps quieter than before. She didn't speak until we reached the entrance. "You sure about this?" she asked. I looked at her. "You think I have a choice?" She sighed. "Just don't get yourself killed." I smirked. "No promises." Then I turned and stepped back into the night, the city stretching out before me like an open grave. I had a name. I had a job. And I was about to start a war. Chapter 4: Blood on the Pavement. Seattle at night is a different beast. The rain turns the city into a sea of neon reflections, washing the filth off the streets, but never cleaning what lies beneath. The people moving in the shadows, the deals being made in alleyways, the blood being spilled on cold concrete. It all keeps flowing, hidden just beneath the surface, just out of sight. And I was about to add to it. Victor Langley wasn't just another name on a list. He was the guy, the fixer, the cleanup crew for the rich and powerful, the one who made problems disappear before they ever became scandals. If he was involved in the setup that put me behind bars, he wasn't just working for the enemy. He was the enemy. And tonight, he was going to die. The setup. I spent the entire day tracking Langley, watching his patterns, looking for a window where I could slip in and end him before he even knew I was coming. He was careful. Paranoid. He had reason to be. A man like him made enemies by the dozen, and the fact that he was still breathing meant he was damn good at staying one step ahead. He had a routine. Every night, after handling whatever dirty business the city threw at him, he stopped at a private club, a sleek, high-end place in the International District called the Orchid Room. No press, no cameras, just velvet drapes, low lighting, and rich men making backroom deals over whiskey and cigars. That was my in. But getting close to him wasn't the problem. Getting out afterward was. The hit. I dressed the part, black suit, clean shave, like I belonged in a room full of snakes. The bouncer at the front barely glanced at me before letting me inside. The club was a haze of jazz and money, the kind of place where the drinks cost more than rent and everyone in the room thought they were untouchable. Langley sat in the back, surrounded by his usual crew, three bodyguards, all armed, all mean-looking sons of bitches. He was sipping a glass of bourbon, smirking at something the guy next to him was saying. I kept my distance, grabbed a drink, and waited. Waited for the moment he peeled away from the crowd, went to the bar alone, or stepped outside for a breath of fresh air. It came an hour later. Langley left the table, adjusting the cuff of his designer suit as he moved toward the back exit. One of his guards followed, but I had already planned for that. A well-timed distraction, a drunk businessman picking a fight with the bartender, was enough to pull the bodyguard away for just a moment. That was all I needed. I slipped through the door just as Langley stepped into the alley, the cold air cutting through the warmth of the club. He barely had time to react before I grabbed him from behind, slamming him against the brick wall. He grunted in pain, his bourbon glass shattering on the ground. "Jack," he choked out, his voice filled with confusion. "What the hell are you?" I pressed my knife against his throat, cutting off the question. His body tensed. "Shut up," I growled. He swallowed hard, the blade biting into his skin just enough to draw blood. "Look," he stammered, "if this is about Whitaker, I pressed harder. "You set me up." Langley's eyes darted around, looking for an escape. "I didn't," he said, voice shaking. "I swear to God I didn't. I was just the cleaner. I didn't pull the trigger." I clenched my jaw. "Then who did?" He hesitated. I pushed the knife deeper. "Talk." His breathing was ragged now. It was Carver. The name hit like a gut punch. Mayor Randall Carver. The same bastard who went on TV after Whitaker's murder, talking about justice, about how no one is above the law. My vision went red. Langley must have seen it, because he started panicking. "Listen, Jack, you don't have to do this," he babbled. "Carver's a dead man walking anyway. He's pissed off the wrong people. Just let me go, and I can." I twisted the knife. Langley gasped, his body jerking violently as the blade slid between his ribs. I watched the light drain from his eyes, his hands scrabbling weakly at my arms before going still. His body slumped forward, limp and useless. I let him drop. The alley was silent, except for the distant hum of the city and the slow drip of blood pooling around his body. I stepped back, wiping my knife on his jacket. Then I turned and disappeared into the night. The fallout. The city didn't mourn Langley. By morning, his death was just another headline. Underworld fixer found dead in alley. No suspects. No leads. Just another ghost swallowed by the streets. But I didn't give a damn about Langley anymore. Because now I had a bigger target. Carver. The bastard thought he was untouchable, sitting in his mansion, surrounded by armed guards, believing his hands were clean because he never held the knife himself. He thought I was gone. That I was just another name in the system. But I wasn't. I was still here. And I was coming for him. Nina found me later that night, sitting on the rooftop of an abandoned building, watching the city breathe below me. She sat next to me without a word, pulling a cigarette from her pocket and lighting it. We sat in silence for a while, the smoke curling into the air. Then she finally spoke. "You really gonna do it?" I didn't take my eyes off the skyline. "Yeah," she exhaled slowly. "You know Carver's got an army, right?" I smirked. "Then I'll have to start a war." She chuckled, shaking her head. "You're a crazy son of a bitch." I finally turned to look at her. "Are you in?" Nina studied me for a moment, then flicked her cigarette over the edge of the roof. "Yeah," she said. Then she stood, stretching her arms. "But if we're gonna take down the mayor," she added, "we're gonna need more than just the two of us." I grinned. "I've got a few ideas." The city stretched before us, its streets glistening with rain, its secrets buried under layers of lies. But not for much longer. Because tomorrow, we weren't just going after Carver. We were going to burn it all down. Chapter 5, Rat City Burns. Seattle has always been a city built on lies. The streets above, the shining glass towers, the smiling faces on billboards. All of it is a carefully constructed illusion, meant to keep the real filth buried beneath the surface. But filth has a way of seeping through the cracks. And tonight, I was going to tear those cracks wide open. Mayor Randall Carver thought he had the world fooled. He stood in front of cameras, shaking hands, promising change, pretending to be the man who cleaned up Seattle's streets. Behind the scenes, he was running the real game. He had Senator Whitaker killed. He had me framed. He buried his mistakes under a pile of bodies and let men like Victor Langley mop up the mess. But Langley was dead, and I was still standing, which meant Carver's time was up. Tonight, we weren't playing by his rules. Tonight, we were burning it all down. The plan. I spent the next 24 hours preparing for war. Rourke came through on his end of the deal. After Langley was taken off the board, he handed over everything, documents, recordings, emails, names. A trail of corruption that led straight to Carver's doorstep. It was all there. Bribes. Murders. Backroom deals. The kind of evidence that would bury him 100 times over. But exposing him wasn't enough. I knew how this game worked. Carver had spent years building his empire. He had friends in high places, men willing to pull strings to keep their golden boy safe. I wasn't interested in playing courtroom games. I wanted to make an example out of him. Nina helped me plan the hit. Carver's mansion sat on the edge of the city, an isolated fortress with a private security team that would make a small army nervous. Motion sensors. Guard dogs. High-tech surveillance. Getting in was suicide. But I wasn't going in through the front door. I was going in from underneath. Seattle was a city of tunnels, forgotten pathways, and hidden entry points no one remembered except the people who lived down there. Carver's mansion? It was built on old land. Land that used to be part of the underground before the city buried it under fresh concrete. But Rat City never forgets. Nina and I found the entrance we needed, an old service tunnel half-collapsed from years of neglect. It ran right under Carver's estate, hidden beneath the foundation like a rotting vein. All we had to do was follow it. And when we came up for air, Seattle was going to witness the fall of its king. The infiltration. We moved under the cover of darkness. The tunnel was a nightmare, rats the size of house cats, standing water that smelled like death, air so thick with mold that every breath tasted like damp rot. But it was safe. No cameras. No guards. No eyes watching us. When we reached the foundation of Carver's estate, we climbed through a crumbling maintenance shaft, inching our way up until we hit the basement. No alarms. No motion sensors. Just darkness and silence. We were inside. Nina pulled her gun, a silencer screwed onto the barrel. I gripped my knife, my heartbeat steady, my breath controlled. No second chances. This had to be perfect. We moved through the mansion like ghosts, sticking to the shadows, avoiding the patrolling guards. The layout was just like Rourke said. Two floors, security room on the first level, Carver's office upstairs. We needed to take out the power first. Then we'd gut the beast from the inside. The kill. The first guard never saw it coming. I slipped behind him, clamped a hand over his mouth, and slid my knife across his throat. He went down without a sound, his body hitting the floor like a sack of bricks. Nina took out the next one, a single shot to the head. By the time we reached the security room, the house was still quiet. I smashed the panel, cutting the feed to all the cameras. Now it was just us and Carver. We moved fast, climbing the stairs two at a time. At the end of the hall, behind a set of ornate double doors, our target was waiting. Carver sat at his desk, swirling a glass of scotch, his eyes locked on the news playing on a massive screen. He knew. He knew what was coming. When we kicked in the door, he didn't flinch. He smiled. "I was wondering when you'd show up," he said, setting his drink down. I leveled my gun at his head. "You should have killed me when you had the chance." Carver leaned back, completely unfazed. "If I had, who would have done all this work for me?" I hesitated. And that's when I saw it. The small red light blinking on the desk. A recording device. The bastard had been waiting for us. The twist. Carver chuckled, shaking his head. "You really think this is how it ends? You think I didn't plan for this?" I gritted my teeth. "Shut up." But he didn't stop. "The second you walked in here, my men were notified. You're not leaving this house alive, Calloway." I glanced at Nina. She was already moving, pulling something from her jacket. A detonator. Carver's smirk faltered. "What the hell is that?" he demanded. Nina gave him a grin colder than death. "Insurance." She pressed the button. The explosion ripped through the mansion, shaking the walls, sending fire and debris raining down from the ceiling. Carver's face twisted in shock. "You." I pulled the trigger. One shot. Right between the eyes. The mayor of Seattle slumped forward, his scotch glass tumbling from his hand, shattering on the floor. It was over. The city's biggest liar, its most powerful rat, was dead. And the whole world was about to know it. The escape. The mansion was collapsing. We ran through the smoke and fire, dodging falling beams, pushing past the chaos as Carver's guards scrambled to make sense of what the hell had just happened. By the time we hit the tunnels, sirens were already screaming in the distance. We disappeared back into the underground, vanishing into the city like ghosts. By morning, the news would break. Seattle would wake up to headlines about Mayor Randall Carver found dead in the ruins of his own home. No suspects. No witnesses. Just justice. The kind that doesn't come from a courtroom. The kind that makes damn sure the rats never sleep easy again. Epilogue. A week later, I sat on a rooftop, staring at the city below. The skyline hadn't changed. The streets still pulsed with life. But something was different. Seattle had felt Carver's death. The people who pulled the strings? They were scared now. And me? I was still a ghost. Still out there. Still waiting. Because there's always another rat. And I'd be there when they crawled out of the shadows. Ready to put them back where they belonged. The end.